welcome to this Monday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. We hope you had a wonderful weekend. Coming up a little bit later in today's show, we'll hear from our good friend Dr. Tom Ezern and another of his great Plains Folk essays, and we'll also continue a discussion that we're going to start here in the first half of Main Street with Linda Pauling, the co-founder of the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and also Billy Joe Zielinski, the president and CEO of Make-A-Wish North Dakota. Linda's story is heartwarming, as we'll learn. Started with the death of her son, Chris, and the wish Linda was able to put together for her son, and then it became a matter of taking $37 and turning it into a global organization that does an incredible amount of good, granting life-changing wishes to children with critical illnesses and her family. We'll also take time today on Main Street to continue our 2025 Spring Pledge Drive here at Prairie Public, encouraging you to either add to your sustaining level of membership or perhaps become a sustaining member of Prairie Public for the very first time. This is an important time in the life of public media here in North Dakota, and we hope that you'll give good consideration to becoming a sustaining member. And we begin Main Street today with Linda Pauling, the mother of Make-A-Wish. Linda, it's a pleasure to have you on Main Street.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here on Main Street.
We have so much to learn about Make-A-Wish. I think everyone is familiar with Make-A-Wish, but I didn't, and I'm sure many of our listeners didn't know its roots, and we're going to learn about those today. And also with us is Billy Joe Zielinski. She's president and CEO of Make-A-Wish North Dakota. Billy Joe, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you so very much.
Linda, I want to start with you first. You're co-founder of the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and it became a thing out of your personal story. Can you share that with us?
I would love to. My little boy, Chris, was diagnosed with leukemia at 4.5 years old. It was our first day in Phoenix. We had a mother and 3 grandparents that we had to bring back from Illinois. My father had just passed away, and we had his car there to get back home here. So cross country we came. Somewhere in the middle of Texas, Chris developed a bloody nose and things just weren't right. Got to Phoenix the next day and little pinprick on his finger, and the doctor says, I believe he has leukemia. So he said, here's the address to St. Joseph's Hospital. They're waiting for you.
And you went to try to get some treatment?
Treatments. The doctor gave him 3.5 years maximum.
What did you think when you learned of this diagnosis?
Well, being just a little farm kid, well, what is it and how do we get rid of it?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so he just kind of explained it to me and we went from there. And from that night on, I vowed to make a lifetime in 3 years with this little boy. And we did. We did everything from throwing snowballs and Flagstaff to face painting, little fun fairs for kids. And
Chris wanted to be a member of the Highway Patrol.
Yes, he loved cops.
Tell me that story.
Well, he probably got me out of more tickets because he could spot these guys down the road. So I just back off the gas of the truck. But we had a friend, Tom Austin, U.S. Customs agent, and his wife. They were excellent. And I had gone to school with Kay, his wife, which is how I met Tommy. And Chris was kind of playing with their little girl and fell asleep on the sofa. And Tommy walks in, it's probably about 8:30, 9 o'clock, sees this little guy sleeping on his sofa, rubs his little semi-bald head, and woke Chris up. Well, Chris grabbed his pistol, drew it, said, freeze, I'm a cop. So Tommy, 6-foot U.S. Customs agent, raises his hands. Chris held his weapon on him, frisked him. Somehow I missed the .357 under the jacket, the one in the back pocket, you know, the .22, and the ankle holster. But he holstered his weapon, stuck out his hand, and said, hi, I'm Chris. And Tommy stuck out his hand. They shook hands. The other hand was the badge. So they were buds. They were just there. Now, it was Several months later, when Tommy and Kay approached me and said, "We know something's going on. What is going on with Chris? Why is he bruising? Why is he, you know?" And I said, "Well, he has leukemia." And Tom said, "Okay, when he needs it the most, we're going to get him a ride in a real police helicopter." So that was in 77 when we talked about that. And it was in mid-April of 1980. I made a phone call to Tommy because I had taken Chris into the doctor and prognosis were coming to the end. I said, "Tommy, if there's any way to call in that promise, now is the time." So he had been talking to fellow officers, DPS, highway patrolmen, the undercover guys, and said, "We need to pull this together. Can you help?" And Ronnie Cox stepped up, said, "Yes, I'm with you." So in a matter of a week and a half, basically, the entire highway patrol department came together, rides in helicopter, flew him around Phoenix on taxpayers' money, I learned 20 years later. But it was,
Good use of taxpayers' money, I would think.
I don't think they mind that. Yeah, they had a talk with the director, got to sit and visit with him and radio communications. They were all explaining to this was this little boy's first day on the job, so he was taking it all in big time. They literally swore him in as a honorary highway patrolman, officially signed, sealed, stamped certificate, badge, and all.
This is before Make-A-Wish was really even an idea.
It was
So
not,
tell me
yeah.
what your emotions were seeing your son's wish fulfilled.
Well, it was tremendous. I had a lot of Kleenexes that day too. But we, to see people come together, just do something that I was totally incapable of doing. And God knows I really busted tail to make everything happen for him. But it was overwhelming. It just, for like that one day, you have no world of light, no doctors, no anything, just happiness, smiles. And you see your child as a normal little boy, running, jumping, excited to, be alive, and more enthusiasm than what I had seen.
The things that he received that day stayed with him until the very end.
Very end. Christopher was buried in full uniform. John's uniform had made a uniform for him. They brought it out to the house. They pinned the badge on him, got him all straightened around. And they even had little clover leaves, the major, and just got him all situated. So he outranked everybody that day. But it was amazing.
So there had to become a moment when you thought, you know what, my son was a benefactor of this incredible wish. Maybe others
Exactly.
can as well. And is it true that you spent $37 to get Make-A-Wish started?
Yes, there were five of us met, the officers, the wife of an officer, and myself. Five of us there at Sergeant Smith's home. And we were sitting in front of the fireplace too. And we became legal after 9 months, the paperwork, IRS, meeting
As a nonprofit
as a
organization.
nonprofit organization. And we reached in our pockets. We needed to open a bank account and said, "Okay, we got to get at least $25 to open a bank account." So we ended up with $37.76. And that's what we kind of shoved towards Kathy. And we said, "I think we just elected you our secretary treasurer." And we just kind of went from there. But
And how did it go from there? Because now this is a worldwide endeavor.
it is tremendous. People were so kind to us. The television stations and newspapers, they had seen the coverage. They knew of this, the whole media world. And they just said, "Let us help." People called us. "What can we do to help? What do you need?" And they wrote articles. They did interviews, they kept the momentum going. We wrote to highway patrol officers to retirement. You know, this is what we're trying to do. We want to, there's more kids out there. We're going to go find them. Do you want to help? And by the grace of God, we did.
Linda, I'll come back to you in just a moment. I want to bring in Billie Jo Zielinski. She's the president and CEO of Make-A-Wish North Dakota, an organization that's now been around for 40 years.
Yeah, so our mission is very simple and it hasn't changed for the 40 years that we've been a chapter and the 45 years this organization and since Nurses Wish. Our wish is to create together, we create life-changing wishes for children with critical illnesses. And I think that purity of that we our vision is to reach every eligible child in North Dakota, across the United States, around the world. Because when you receive a diagnosis, a lot of kids get told, no, you can't do this. You gotta go somewhere else to be get treatment. You can't go to school. Maybe your sibling has to stay home or your dad has to stay home. And just your life is turned upside down in a moment. What we get to do is we get to come in at a pretty vulnerable time and walk alongside not only the child, but also the whole family and say, what can we do for you along this way to bring you hope and joy and some strength? And oftentimes it gives the doctors and the other referral sources who are part of our partnership an opportunity to talk about something different than, oh, your next chemo is this date, or oh, we're going to have surgery. You know, the treatment protocols are also adhered to because they're looking forward. You have to get better because you're going to go to Disney World, you know, or whatever it may be. And I think I feel so privileged to have almost for 12 years been a part of such an amazing organization that started from Chris. And I feel a little kinship to Chris. I'm just only a couple months older than he would have been. And so I just feel very lucky to do this job. It's more than a job, it's a calling and a vocation. Yeah, over 1,150 wishes in North Dakota. I'm very proud of that. I wish we didn't have to exist, right, Craig? That would mean that there would be cures for everything. But until that time comes, we'll continue to do the work that we need to do. It's not just a need to have, it is essential for them to get better.
It's 1,100 and counting.
Yes.
So
Unfortunately or fortunately.
people want to learn more, I think, who are listening right now. What should they do here in North Dakota?
In North Dakota, and we've touched every one of the 53 counties in North Dakota has been touched by Make-A-Wish. And so if you want to get involved, you can certainly call us. You can go online at wish.org/North Dakota. We have all the social media channels, so follow us. You can see wonderful stories. You'll get a behind the scenes look at different people who help our mission come to life, like again, those medical partners who refer kids or the volunteers. I mean, we're a small and mighty staff. We actually depend on over 185 volunteers across this great state to really deliver our mission. Sometimes we don't even get to meet the kiddos or the families. It's actually those volunteers in their communities helping make those wishes.
And are you celebrating your 40th year?
Yes, we're very excited. I mean, there's always opportunities to celebrate and make a wish.
How did you connect with Linda?
Well, actually, it was my first when I became a CEO in October of 2013. I was a week on the job and I went to the national conference and I got to meet her then. And I was so drawn to her. It's not just that she is a rock star founder of this organization, but her heart, I think you've seen it already, is just very, very open and warm. And you just want to be in her orbit. She's actually come to North Dakota now. This is your third
Third
time
time,
being in North Dakota. She helped us celebrate our 30th anniversary. And she was also out in Dickinson, the Dickinson New Lions, in that community. It does a tremendous job of supporting Make-A-Wish. And she was out there celebrating with them.
Linda, you've shared with me pictures of Chris
Yes.
blowing a bubble, wearing a law enforcement hat in a law enforcement uniform on a tractor there.
No, that was a little police motorcycle that his father and I had purchased to help take the place of the wheelchair. Gave him a little bit more of confidence in himself and mobility. Then he would just plug it in, unplug it, and scoot out the door.
So then, after Chris passed, we are in the early days of Make-A-Wish. What were
Yes.
the challenges that you had to clear?
Oh, Well, of course, incorporations and all, papers, things. But the challenges were getting the story out there. That's where the newspapers, the PR came in handy. And everywhere we went, hopefully they'd seen the film or remembered, but we'd go through the entire story over and over. And it was myself, Tom Austin, Ronnie, of course, everybody, the five of us. And we kind of recruited our friends, our neighbors, our family members. And our first little wish was Guadalupe Indian boy named Bopsy, who wanted to be a fireman. And this, I think, really set Make-A-Wish off because it came off so flamboyant. The fire department just went all out. Bopsy, of course, now we had spent 9 months, one wish per child, and do it upright. Well, Bopsy had three wishes. Plus the fact, being Indian, he took an oath of manhood at 7, and his oath was not to talk to us, not to speak, okay? His mother, anybody. So it was a little difficult to find out what his wish was, but mom helped out a little bit. He wanted to ride in a hot air balloon. He wanted to go to Disneyland and be a fireman. Not a problem. Cops and firemen worked together. Hot air balloon. We knew a gentleman who had one. He says, "I'll tether it all day. We'll go up and down like an elevator, Disneyland, a little bit more difficult. They hung up on me about 15 times. You want something for nothing, and boom, like this. It was probably a couple hours later, somewhere in there, I had called Highway Patrol and I said, "Alan, I need a very strong Highway Patrol." Explained the situation. I did receive a phone call back from a young lady, Ann Alinskas. And she said, "I just happened to have been in Phoenix. I saw the footage on your son, and I know what you're trying to do." She said, "You send Bopsy out, we'll take care of it."
You've shared with me many different types of wishes.
Oh, all kinds. There's
Give us some examples, and I bet you're still surprised today sometimes.
Yes. We had one little boy that wanted to wrestle an alligator. I know it was in Florida, and I know that the zoo probably picked the granddaddy of them all and had him all taped up. He wasn't going to move, but daddy set the little boy on the back of the alligator, and he got to feel all the bumps and things. And he was excited. But no, there's been so many. Everything from "I want a red wagon and I want to go make cookies with grandma back in the snow. I want to build a snowman." It's such a wide range. Think back when you were a child. What would have been your wish? Movie star,
Major League
sports?
Baseball game.
Yeah. It is so wide range. You never know. A wish is only the limited your imagination.
Tell me about the young person who went to Toys R Us.
Oh, that was beautiful. We've had several of those kids, but this little girl, she was about 12, 12-ish, and she wanted a shopping spree at a toy store. So limo pulls up, mom and the little girl go in, and she's picking out all kinds of toys. Not her age bracket, but from 3 years old, little games, little things that all the way up to type of things. Load them in the limo, and she wouldn't tell her mom what she wanted all these different things for. And the driver of the limo said, "Okay, where to next?" She kills the homeless shelter for the kids. It's just amazing that these kids, we've had lots of those type of things.
Coming after the break, we'll have more of our discussion with Linda Pauling. She's the co-founder of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And with Billy Joe Zielinski, the president and CEO of Make-A-Wish North Dakota, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary. Make-A-Wish is a global nonprofit that grants life-changing wishes to children with critical illnesses. And Linda's story is so heartwarming. But now we turn our attention to our pledge drive. It's our spring pledge drive here at Prairie Public. With me during this pledge break is my good friend and colleague, Eric Dethridge. Eric, nice to see you in the Main Street studio.
Hey, Craig, great to see you as well, and a privilege to sit in on that conversation that you're having with Linda Pauling and also Billy Joe as well. I mean, yeah, you couldn't have picked a more resonant conversation to have than the founder of Make-A-Wish, and I know that I'm touched by it. I know that everyone who is listening right now, I bet you're touched by it too, dear listener, and I hope that you appreciate the work that goes into creating space for conversations like that, and we have a talented host who gets to ask those kind of questions and pique your interest, and who wouldn't be interested in this wonderful organization, Make-A-Wish? You know, another good organization is Prairie Public, because we are the place for conversations like that every single day with Main Street. Craig is your host. He's the convener of these conversations. Hope you appreciate that. And we are asking for your help during the Spring Member Drive. Prairie Public is a dependable source of local, national, and international news and outstanding conversations. So we're asking you to step up with a pledge of support today. You can donate any amount, and you are a monthly sustaining member. $5, $10, $15, $20 a month. You decide. Just call 800-359-4145 or go online to prairiepublic.org.
Eric, I'll talk about it after my conversation ends with Linda. We're going to air the rest of it after our news break here. But this is one of the more emotional interviews that I've ever had a chance to be a part of. And I don't take that lightly when I get to visit with someone who has been so invested in their career, in their nonprofit, in their life, in whatever it is that they do. I get a license to do that here on Main Street and bring those stories to our listeners. And we do hope that they enjoy it. But we are at a time when we ask folks to support exactly that, Eric, to support our work to bring stories like this to our listeners here on Main Street and through the radio, through other opportunities that we have for programming at Prairie Public. Our number's right there. Eric just gave it to you. Let me give it to you again, if I could, please. 800-359-4145. Easiest bet for you might be to go online to prairiepublic.org, click the Donate tab, become a sustaining member, or maybe up your sustaining membership if you've been a member for quite a while, Eric.
Yeah, speaking of that, Craig, we have a match going on for those who love when there are double your dollar matches. Well, this is one of them, thanks to the Martineaus of Sydney, Montana, a couple that is going to challenge you right now to go to the phone and call 800-359-4145 or go to prairiepublic.org. Every monthly sustaining membership, new, or if you're upping your membership, will be matched dollar for dollar. So $10 a month contribution turns into $20 a month, etc. And you can just set it up really easily on a checking account, credit card. It takes just a minute or two of your time. Go to prairiepublic.org or call 800-359-4145.
Eric, we're going to wrap up this pledge break now. Before we do, though, we want to let folks know that their financial support is now so vitally important to Prairie Public.
Yes.
As you said, the dollars that are given today will be matched. But it helps pay for programming, not just for local programs like Main Street, but for all of the national programs that we've come to love, whether it be Morning Edition, whether it be our weekend set of programs. All of that is supported by our members, and we are gracious that they are listening and wanting to support. We continue now our chat with Billy Joe Zielinski, the president and CEO of Make-A-Wish North Dakota, and Linda Pauling. She's the mother of the Make-A-Wish Foundation, a global nonprofit now that grants life-changing wishes to children with critical issues. She began Make-A-Wish with just a little over $37 and a hope that she could help people locally in Phoenix after her son Chris died from leukemia. And we continue now with her story, which is inspirational.
Not only is this a reward, so to speak, for the young person who has this incredible burden of a terminal disease, but also for the family. Families must have great stories for you and what it's meant to them.
Yes, because you know, I've talked to a lot of parents over the years, and we all feel the same. It's a group of people that enter your life just as the officers did ours, and just give of themselves, their time, their talents, their abilities to make things happen, just to make a child smile. It relieves the parents of a lot of stress, traumatic stress of knowing that your child is ill, very critically, and just to have that warmth in your heart that, guys, these people don't want anything in return. They just want to help. And it's so wonderful.
What's Chris's legacy?
All of Make-A-Wish. Every volunteer, every child, every corporation, everybody that contributes to making a child's wish come true. That is his legacy.
What's the future of Make-A-Wish?
Oh, it's neato. It's going to be great. It really is. Because we're going to reach every child around the world. And hopefully the doctors, the medical field is going to catch up with us and figure out what is causing all of these children to be so ill. And they have done a wonderful job. They really have. I commend them highly because I've talked to many doctors. They even do studies that a child with a wish, it is so important. They're even prescribing wishes because they see a difference in the child's well-being, attendance to school, wanting to excel. We have
the family able to look forward a little bit.
They are. Some of that stress is gone, and there's hope. There's joy. There's memories. There's just laughter. Everything that you envision your child growing up to. You know, it's back. It's there. It's not.
Billy Joe, I'm guessing there are people who are listening that are thinking, we're supposed to do this on our own. We're not supposed to reach out for things like this. Yet we know they're so great, so valuable. What would you tell families in North Dakota who might be wondering, well, should I make that call?
Yeah. No, we've actually come upon this a lot. I would say that some people think that, well, I can afford it, number one. Maybe I can afford a trip to Disney, but I tell you what, a trip to Disney World with Make-A-Wish, you cannot get. No. You cannot also buy your child to meet John Cena or your favorite celebrity. Yes. I mean, there are a lot of things that money can't buy, and we take care of everything from start to finish. The other thing is, yes, there's that humble factor, right? We don't need help. We can do this on our own. But I think that it is shown time and time again that the community members want help, and it gives people who are part of the community joy, too. You get joy giving.
Yes.
And I think that's what our founders saw, too. So our founders, 40 years ago, saw a video. Tommy Austin was at an insurance conference down in Vegas, and they saw a little girl who wanted to see snow. She was from Florida, wanted to see snow for the first time. And that video inspired them to come home and try to get a chapter going. There were two insurance guys, Jerry and Kevin, and then there was another woman, Diane, who actually had worked for AT&T, who was an early sponsor of Make-A-Wish. And she had put an ad in the Midweek Eagle looking for people to also be involved. So they got together, and then they had another person who worked at a bank and so said, you could be our treasurer. Yeah. And that's how it started with four caring individuals. And I think letting people into your lives, I mean, these four caring individuals, they didn't know our first wish was Chris, who wanted to watch videos in his hospital room because at the time at St. Luke's, you can only have videos in the public spaces, not in your personal rooms. And he had been relegated because of his treatment in his room. And the local video store gave him all the videos he wanted. The VCR was donated and he got his wish. But it was, people want to help. It gives them joy to do so.
Yes.
And I think allow people into your lives and surround yourself, because you can pay it forward if you want to in the future, but they don't do it for that. They don't want to give. The businesses, the volunteers, us as staff, we're wish makers. We want to surround you and help you along the way.
I think you would take a call from anyone across the state who wants to help also, not just the parents or maybe the grandparents of someone who is ill,
right,
but somebody who's listening who just wants to help to be on your list.
Yeah, and there's so many different ways to help. I think that's what's so cool about this organization. So if it's an organ, if it's a company that wants to do some workplace giving, if you want to be a part of an event like our Wine and Wishes or our World of Wishes in Bismarck and Fargo, there are Dickinson New Lines, that external event that we have. There are a lot of different ways, but also we kind of a unique thing that we are able to accept unused airline miles. And they're able to defray the cost of wishes. And about 75% of our North Dakota wishes want to go somewhere. They want to go to Disney World, or they want to go to Hawaii, or they want to go and meet that celebrity generally that celebrity is far away. And I will just say too, Craig, one thing that I love about Make-A-Wish, and if people want to be a part of that, is you get to see that kids are also going on to survive and thrive.
Yes.
And I think that's one thing I do want to say is that, yes, in those early days, I know I talked to the founders and they said we were granting a lot of wishes and then we were going to a lot of funerals, unfortunately. But as medicine has improved over these 45 years, I'm not going to say that we don't lose to the children. We do. When we do, we give them a star in the sky so that their families can remember them. But a lot of we're getting graduation announcements. We're getting birth announcements, you know, wedding announcements, birth announcements. We have a lot of families who are coming to be a part, giving back, being volunteers, looking at the planned gift for their future and leaving a legacy because it helped them.
They may have been recipients of a wish, but they're still with us.
Yes.
But it couldn't be a better story.
Yes.
There. What's next for you?
Oh, well,
Linda?
I'm going to keep on doing Make-A-Wish.
Where do you live today?
Arizona.
Uh-huh.
It's warm there. It's nice. But no, I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing until the good Lord calls me home.
Linda Pauling, it's been a pleasure.
It's been an honor to meet you.
The founder of Make-A-Wish, the work that you do, we all know about, but here's where it started. What a wonderful story. Billie Joe Zielinski, best wishes to you and all of the work that you do here in North Dakota.
Thank you. And thank you for giving our mission voice and amplifying what we do. And I'm so proud that Linda is here celebrating with us, but also it's pretty cool that we still have our founder who's very integral in our mission still being such an advocate for what we do today.
Are you surprised Make-A-Wish is still here as we wrap things up?
Oh, you know, I'm very proud, very honored that Make-A-Wish is still here. We, in the early years, said, well, hopefully we can help these children in Phoenix, St. Joe's Hospital. But to see it just blossom and bloom like it has is tremendous. I don't think I have the brain power or intelligence to understand it all. But in the heart, yes, because you're helping the family and you're helping kids. And I have always said that I know what was given to Chris. Thank you, Lord, for letting give it back.
It's an honor to visit with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
As host of Main Street, I'm often struck by the extraordinary people I have the privilege to speak with, people whose stories leave a lasting mark on the hearts of our listeners and mine. It's never just another interview. These are conversations that open windows into courage, kindness, and resilience. And every time I sit down with someone like Linda Pauling, the founder of the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and a mother who turned unimaginable loss into a global movement of hope, I'm reminded of just how sacred this responsibility is, and I don't take it for granted. It's truly an honor to hold space for these voices, to ask questions that bring meaning forward, and to share stories that inspire, challenge, and connect us. And I'm humbled every day by the trust people place in me to help tell their stories, and am grateful to our listeners for taking this journey with us. And now let's turn the page, do a little business, if you will, as we continue our spring membership drive here at Prairie Public. I'm pleased to be joined by my colleague, Program Manager Eric Dethridge.
How am I supposed to follow that, Craig Blumenschein? Hey, I hope that you got as much out of that conversation as I did. I mean, it must be quite astounding to talk to a real live hero that whose name we might not know, but the words make a wish, we certainly do. And for those of us like you and I who are parents, Craig, you know, like you said, unimaginable, unspeakable loss and tragedy and turn it into something like this. And as she clarified at the end, it's also for kids who make it, who actually are able to survive thanks to advances in science. And even beyond that, it just gets me to thinking as a parent, like, okay, if it's not going to Disney World, Disneyland or somewhere like that, or you know, flying an airplane or something like that, just creating memories and moments and experiences for my kid, you know, and thinking about that and how I can do that even on a limited budget. So it just gets me to thinking. I learned something and I'm inspired by something that I hear on Main Street. Craig is the convener of these conversations. He's an effortless interviewer, whether he's talking to a newsmaker or the founder of Make-A-Wish. He does an outstanding job at really creating these moments, and it's happening here in North Dakota through our towers and transmitters and our web stream. And it all happens because folks like you step up and say, yeah, I want some of that. I want a local community-based program. And I want the national, international news, but I like that local connectivity. And conversations at 3 in the afternoon. If that's you, step up with a membership right now. It's really easy. It's our spring member drive. Go to prairiepublic.org or call 800-359-4145.
Eric, I like Steve Hartman. And Steve Hartman is a reporter still for CBS News. You get to see him every Sunday morning and maybe at other times during the week on their news shows. And he started with the idea of, I can take any phone book and randomly open its pages. Remember what a phone book was first.
Old enough to remember, yes. Phone booths too.
And put my finger down and I'll go interview that person because that person has a story.
Now, everybody has a story.
Everyone has a story. They may not be a hero like Linda, but I'll bet you a dollar if you went to Starbucks and sat down next to Linda, you would not know who she was until you get a chance to visit with her and learn her story. And that's what we hope to do here on Main Street. As Eric said, it is our pledge drive. We have some business to do. PrairiePublic.org. Give us a call right now at 800-359-4145.
Yep. Listener support, listener donations, that's the single most important way we stay in business here at Prairie Public. We're non-commercial, so advertising dollars, that's not where it's at for public radio. Yes, we do receive some money from governmental sources. You may have heard about some challenges in that department here recently. So listener support becomes a bigger slice of that pie, maybe like two big slices, okay? So if you have not stepped up with a, $5, $10, $15, $20 a month, whatever fits your budget.
It's matched
now, dollar to dollar, dollar for dollar.
Doubled.
So you can power that $20 a month pledge into $40 a month. Make sure Main Street and All Things Considered, which is coming up soon, follows 800-359-4145, prairiepublic.org.
And it's the best time to make your call. Here comes our great friend, Dr. Tom Ezern. I love his Plains Folk essays. Welcome back to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. On this Plains Folk essay, Dr. Tom Ezern uncovers a buried treasure, not gold, but manure. From the archives of the Baldwin Ranches in Dickey County, Dr. Ezern reveals a century-old blueprint for sustainable prairie farming, rich with lessons for today's land stewards.
Having spent a fair bit of time in Ellendale over the years, I always wondered about the history of that elegant insertion in the business district with its triple arch facade known as the Baldwin Building. I knew there had to be a story there, which there is. Right under my nose, it turns out, in the Institute for Regional Studies collections at NDSU Archives, the Baldwin Corporation records span 31.6 feet of archival shelf space. Acquired in 1960 from Baldwin Heirs, that's a lot of paper. But then Baldwin Farms once comprised 70,000 acres in Dickey County. Now, I haven't gone through all those records any more than I have gone over all those acres. Probably never will, but I've rummaged around in them and done some reading on the side. Two works are particularly helpful: a master's thesis in agricultural economics done at North Dakota Agricultural College in 1924, the author of which was assistant manager of Baldwin Farms, and an article in North Dakota History by one of the founders of the Institute for Regional Studies, the historian William C. Hunter. Although Baldwin Farms was not one of those big operations set up on Northern Pacific Railroad lands in the 1870s, it is classified as a bonanza farm, one of those that came together by the action of an investor buying up homesteads and other properties and piecing them together. That investor was an attorney and land shark in Wisconsin named George B. Baldwin, Sr. Most of what we know about Bonanza Farms comes from the classic work published by the Institute in 1964, The Day of the Bonanza, A History of Bonanza Farming in the Red River Valley of the North, written by Hiram M. Trockey and published by the Institute. High didn't use the Baldwin papers. He had enough to deal with researching the core Bonanza Farms along the railroad. For the Institute holds not only the papers of J.B. Powers, the land agent who set up the Bonanzas, but also those of several of the great ones. I'm here to suggest, though, that it's time for some scholars younger than I, not only to work through those Baldwin records, but also to recolonize the other Bonanza farm collections. High Drockey was a lover of big agriculture and big business who was interested in Bonanza farms primarily as business ventures. The perspective of his writings affects how the State Historical Society and other interpreters view the Bonanza Farms for their business interest. I'm saying there is more there. My shallow dive into the Baldwin collection indicates we can learn a lot about other things that interest us today. The dynamics of the settler society on the ground and its interactions with the land itself, things about people and soil and crops and livestock and living on the land, not just the account books. Land investors like Old Man Baldwin were kind of a problem on the settlement frontier. He accumulated properties, rented them out, neglected them, and by the time of his passing in 1907, they were a soil-exhausted, weed-infested mess. His two sons took over the land company and cleaned up operations, disposing of some lands to actual settlers, renting additional land to them, and then, north and east of Ellendale, setting up a string of what they called ranches, but which really were model diversified farms. Under private auspices, the Baldwins conducted an experimental venture in how to farm the plains. This is worth another look. Stay tuned.
That was another Plains Folk essay brought to us by our good friend Dr. Tom Ezern, a distinguished professor of history at North Dakota State University. Dr. Ezern brings us his essays each week on Main Street, and we're grateful. One of the great things, Eric Dethridge, who's with me here in the Main Street studio that we get to hear every week, is Tom.
He's so lyrical. It's like listening to a song or a sonnet or something. I mean, there's just like there's rhythm to it. There's just a lot of beauty in the way he speaks.
For someone who's new to North Dakota still, and even though I've now been here for over 3 years, I consider myself a newbie. I love being able to enjoy once a week the history of our state.
Yeah.
And it's helped me learn quite a lot, and I think our listeners have liked it as well. I know it performs well. You can hear Tom streaming by himself each week on the podcast that we publish here at Prairie Public. But Tom's just an example of someone who comes in and volunteers his time for us, Eric.
Yeah, another voice of the prairie that gives his or her time as well as their talents. And aren't we lucky that we've had Tom on for he just celebrated that anniversary not that long ago?
More than 1,000 Plains Folk essays.
Yeah. To your ears. We do it because we want to inspire you. We want you to learn about the history in this amazing part of the world. Whether you've been here 10, 20 years or all your life, there's something to enjoy. And, of course, there's Dakota Date Book, too. A lot of work goes into that. But basically, you know, now it's the spring fun drive. And in fact, we only have today and tomorrow. It's a very short one. And so we're asking you to, you know, if you enjoy this, if you love this, step up now and give whatever that you can. You decide. It's public radio. No bill comes to you. There's no subscription service. You don't have to pay anything more to get rid of ads. It's just whatever you decide this is worth to you. And call 800-359-4145.
Sometimes I think when people are contemplating whether they want to become a member, they're thinking that my $10 a month, my $20 a month, that's not going to make a difference. But I can tell you, one, that every dollar that's pledged to Prairie Public during our pledge drive is matched. So your $10 really becomes $20. And all of a sudden, that becomes $240 a year. And that is important to us here at Prairie Public. We value our listener dollars. We do. I watch it every day. I watch it in our staff who is concerned about public media. I watch it in our staff who loves public media. And you can see it in the work that we do on the radio side and the great work. We had Matt Olean talking about the new veterans documentaries that are about people from the region that's going to air here on Prairie Public soon. And Dave Thompson brings us the news every day. And Eric, I'll tell you what, if we don't do it here at Prairie Public about our state, nobody else will.
Who will do that? Who's going to pick up the void? I mean, if Prairie Public were not here to tell stories like this, it's not something that the commercial landscape is lining up to take a swing at. You know, it's public radio and listener-supported media that has a space, that fuels a space like this. And, you know, a couple times a year, we got to remind you that those that give already maybe need to give a little more if you can. But certainly those that have never given for the at all, and this would be the first time, now's the time. 800-359-4145, prairiepublic.org.
Eric, I'll take it out. We've got 5 seconds left. We want you to go online right now. It's easy to do. Prairiepublic.org.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 5th. On this date in 1918, William Henry Lader was born in Flasher, North Dakota, to Carl Benjamin and Helena Augusta Lader. Bill went to school in Mandan, and after graduating from Mandan High School, went on to the North Dakota State Teachers College and graduated with a Bachelor of Arts degree. Lader taught school in North Dakota for several years before enlisting in the Navy in April of 1941. He was initially stationed at the Naval Reserve Aviation Base in Minneapolis, Minnesota. In October of that year, he became an aviation cadet and attended flight training at the Pensacola Naval Air Station on the Florida Gulf Coast. He was commissioned as an ensign in May of 1942. That same month, he married his sweetheart, Catherine Sylvia Loren. Catherine Sylvia Loren, before being transferred in June to a carrier training group in San Diego. By August of 1942, he was assigned to Fighting Squadron 10, also known as the Grim Reapers, flying the Grumman F-4F Wildcat. He was sent to the Pacific Theater and operated from the aircraft carrier USS Enterprise. Later flew with the renowned Cactus Air Force, supporting the Guadalcanal campaign against superior Japanese forces. He flew from the Enterprise during the Battle of the Santa Cruz Islands and participated in multiple combat air patrols in defense of his carrier group. On October 26th, he shot down at least one Japanese dive bomber that was attacking the Enterprise. On November 13th, 1942, he was part of a four-plane flight combat patrol over the Enterprise that shot down a Japanese patrol bomber. Later on January 30th, 1943, Lader shot down a torpedo bomber that was attacking the cruiser USS Chicago, which was sitting damaged near Rennell Island. Lader was recommended for the Distinguished Flying Cross by his commander and was ultimately awarded the Air Medal Citation for his actions against the Japanese. After his tour in the Pacific, Lader was assigned to the Ellensburg Army Airfield in Ellensburg, Washington, and because of his superb flying abilities, served as a test pilot on new aircraft. On September 5, 1943, the experimental airplane he was flying caught fire and crashed near the airfield. Lieutenant William Henry Lader was killed. He was 25 years old. William was laid to rest at the Washelli Veterans Memorial Cemetery in Seattle, Washington. Today's Dakota Datebook is written by Scott Nelson. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
And that's a wrap for this Monday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are deeply grateful that you've spent time with us. And remember, right now, your support for Prairie Public matters more than ever. When you become a sustaining member at prairiepublic.org, you're not just funding great radio, you're fueling trusted news, inspiring conversations, and programs like Main Street, where we celebrate our region's people and their stories. It's easy, it's affordable, and it makes a lasting difference. Join us today. Your community is counting on you. Tomorrow on Main Street, we're reminded that May is Stroke Awareness Month, and we visit with experts from Essentia Health who remind us about stroke prevention and care. That's ahead tomorrow, right here on Main Street, and we hope you'll be with us again.